This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
11th, 2016, five climate activists shut down every pipeline carrying tar sands crude from Canada to the United States. One of them, Michael Foster, is in the state penitentiary in Bismarck, North Dakota. We will talk to the other four as they await their sentencing, and they will give the defense that so far no court has allowed them to tell a jury of their peers.
The Val Turners.
The first defendant charged with defending the earth, of course, is Leonard Higgins. After retiring with his job from the government of Oregon, Leonard co-founded 350corvallis.org in Corvallis, home to Oregon State University. In 2013, Higgins was part of a direct action against the tar sands. We'll ask him about that. After another action on October 11, 2016, he was found guilty of shutting down the Spectra Energy Express pipeline in Montana. Leonard Higgins, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here.
You worked for 31 years for the Oregon government. Frankly, you look like kind of an average guy. You could be my neighbor. What woke you up to social justice for the climate threat?
So it was a gradual thing. It's rooted in my upbringing in church and a sense of right and wrong that I was brought up with in my family. The thing that really brought me around the corner, though, was a workshop that I attended in 2007. It was called The Work That Reconnects. It's a lifelong work of Joanna Macy. And it describes the need for us to do exactly the challenge in front of us, and that's to change from an industrial growth society to a life-sustaining civilization. And the most impactful part of that workshop was what Joanna calls facing our pain for the world. It's part of the spiral. She has folks start out in gratitude, really getting in touch with all the wonderful things that we're blessed with in this world. And then with that foundation to really start looking at what's wrong. And I think all of us know, even those that are in strong denial, that there's a lot wrong. And there's a grieving that actually gave me a lot of energy to actually begin doing something about what's wrong.
Tell us about the earlier action in Anacortes, Washington.
So you'd mentioned the tar sands related one, and that was in 2013. That was blocking what's called a mega load. It's prefabricated equipment that was bound for the tar sands in Alberta. The action in 2016, I think it was May of 2016 in Anacortes, Washington, was part of the worldwide effort coordinated by 350.org to demonstrate the need to keep 80% of the fossil fuel reserves in the ground. There were about 5,000 folks involved in that event. And the part that I was involved in, there were about 300 of us at one point camping on the tracks, blocking oil train cars carrying crude oil to the refineries there, Tesoro and a Shell refinery. It was actually the most wonderful sense of community there on the tracks, people that are willing to put their bodies on the line to stop the harm that's being done.
And where does the dirty oil in the Spectra Express pipeline come from, and where does it go?
It comes from the huge tar sands mining operation in Alberta, Canada, and flows along the Canadian border to the west and comes down into Montana. And it's carrying tar sands crude through Montana and to the south to refineries where it's refined into various products. It was one of five tar sands pipelines. All of the tar sands pipelines coming into the U.S. from Canada that our group shut down that day, but it represented about 15% of the U.S. use of crude oil.
And what did you do in Montana? Was it hard?
Yeah, that's kind of a funny question. It was very difficult. I spent my life as a law-abiding person. I was taught that my right to do what I wanted ended at the nose of someone else's rights to do what they wanted and not infringe on others' rights. So I'm the last person to consider trespassing on someone else's property, touching their equipment. On the other hand, I do anything, and I am doing all I can to protect my kids' future and to protect my kids and my loved ones' safety. And so it was hard. It wasn't until I actually finished shutting down the valve after we'd called the pipeline company ahead of time, and they'd basically already shut down the flow by shutting down the pumping stations, that I closed the valve. It wasn't until then that I really breathed a sigh of relief, both in terms of doing what I could to stop the harm and also holding up my end of the work with the group of us. We were able to successfully shut down all five of the pipelines within an hour.
Were you the only one arrested at this particular action in Montana?
I was surprised that I was not the only one. In retrospect, I think it was kind of naive to think that with the amount of repression on protests now underway in the U.S., that the person, Reed Engel, that came with me to live stream the action, we live streamed for two reasons. One, if there was any question by the pipeline company that we were there at their block site and prepared to shut the valve, we wanted to be able to direct them to our website so they could see that we were there and identify their own block valve site. And then secondarily, this was planned from the beginning as a very public act of nonviolent civil disobedience to draw attention to the need not only to stop new fossil fuel infrastructure, but also to scale back, to begin reducing our current use of fossil fuels, reduce the carbon emissions that are creating the climate chaos that we're experiencing.
In court, were you allowed to raise the grave threat of the climate coming from tar sands oil? Could you bring that up?
No, that was very frustrating. We can talk later about the delight that I have in the allowance of what's called the climate necessity defense in the case of the Minnesota valve turners. But first, Judge Boucher in Fort Benton, Montana, denied my motion to be able to bring the climate necessity defense to talk about the threat that we all face. And he denied it without a hearing. Denied it, I think, with very little consideration. And then in court, I had a legal right to talk about my intent, the way the statute reads for the felony criminal mischief charge that I was being tried on, is that I have to have the intent to create criminal mischief, to do damage greater than $1,500 is the threshold in Minnesota. But each time that I talked about climate change, that I attempted to talk about the climate science, particularly the work of Dr. James Hansen, the prosecutor objected, and I was prevented from really talking about my intent, and very much I was prevented from talking to the jury and the judge about the threat of climate change and why I did what I did. And so those will be key factors in our appeal of the conviction. The appeal, again, is not to get off from the consequences of the civil disobedience. It's to draw attention to the problem. And I hope reach other parents like myself who should by now know that their kid's future is threatened. For that matter, their kid's present is threatened. And I know, like me, they'd do anything to protect their kids.
And this isn't just a human story about human impacts. I mean, I love the wild. I think you do, too. And all that innocence is threatened by our addiction to fossil fuels, especially the dirtiest ones. How do you feel about that, Leonard Higgins?
Well, it makes me want to cry, frankly. And the thing that most of us haven't realized is that we're all connected, whether it's human life or the rest of the ecosystems, animals and plants, and that our lives are interrelated. Our human lives and human civilization depend on the ecosystems in a way that we just have not been in touch with. So as we clear the forests around the planet, as we clear the natural ecosystems, as more and more species disappear, we're threatening our own lives. And all of it is precious. I feel as sad about the threat to human civilization. We've learned so much in the thousands of years that we've been in existence. We still demonstrate, of course, our human arrogance and human ignorance every day, and in the way that we're interacting and the way that our countries are posturing towards each other. But there's so much that's precious in our libraries and in the even the history of our own United States. The ideals that this country were founded on, if we could live by them, are very precious to me. So, yeah, it makes me want to cry.
When is your sentencing, and what do you expect will happen, Leonard?
I will receive my sentence from Judge Boucher on March 20 in Fort Benton, Montana. And the maximum that I would receive is 10 years in prison, a $50,000 fine, and court decreed restitution of some thousands of dollars. And it's really uncertain. The judge has complete discretion. Some states have mandatory guidelines that might limit what the judge sentences, but that's not the case in Montana. And so there's room for the politics of the situation to influence the judge. It's, of course, my only felony conviction. And so that the judge definitely has to take that into account. There was a pre-sentencing report done that talks about my background and excellent character and that I present no risk to community. And so it seems very unlikely that the judge could sentence me more than a couple of years. And I'm hopeful that I might receive a deferred sentence in community service, similar to Ken Ward, Washington State Val Turner, his sentence.
What message would you like to pass on to our listeners?
I think that I'll mention my dear friend and fellow Val Turner, Michael Foster, who just began serving a year sentence for closing the valve in North Dakota. He's in the North Dakota State Penitentiary in Bismarck, North Dakota. Michael has spent something like the last 7 or 8 years talking to primarily college and high school students about the threat of climate change. He adapted the climate reality presentation that Al Gore and that group created for the younger audience. He also founded a group that began in Germany. He founded a U.S. chapter in Washington State called Plant for the Planet. And he's literally talked to something on the order of 12 to 14,000 young people and adults about the threat of climate change. And his plea to folks as he went into the state penitentiary is that they plant trees. If we follow Dr. James Hansen's plan for getting back to a stable climate, for protecting our children, we need to reduce the carbon emissions somewhere between 8 and 10% per year. We've waited so long, it could have been on the 4 to 6% range if we would have started back when Dr. James Hansen first communicated the threat in that plan. It's now 8 to 10%. And we need to plant globally at least a trillion trees. The problem is that we've got 100 and perhaps as much as 150 gigatons of carbon in the atmosphere that over the next 30 to 40 years will drive the temperature up so that the Earth can no longer support our species and our civilization. And so if we can pull that carbon out with that trillion trees and bring the parts per million to the 350, that is what can support a stable climate, as well as begin reducing our annual carbon emissions. We have a chance to save our children's future.
I talked to a scientist on Radio EcoShock who said that when trees first began to spread all over the Earth, they did in fact lower the CO2 level and increase the amount of polar ice. So there is some hope. It is a reasonable explanation. I know Dr. James Hansen wanted to testify for Michael Foster, but was not allowed to speak. There's been a lot of muzzling throughout this whole legal system. Our guest has been Leonard Higgins of Oregon. He is a valve turner. Thank you so much, Leonard, for talking with us.
Thank you, Alex.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.